Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of Smut Up and Listen. We are lucky enough to be here today with New York Times, USA Today, Publishers Weekly, and Amazon Charts bestselling author JT Geisinger. She released her newest novel, Blackthorn, earlier this month, and she was kind enough to send us an ARC for us to review, and even nicer to hop on the podcast and Yay. Hang out with us. So thank Hi. You so much, and we are so excited that you're here with us.
Yes.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's so nice for you gals to want to chat about my work. I love it.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, we're so excited.
I know.
I will jump in, and we're going to start talking about the writing process and the journey.
Okay.
Here we go. Took a gulp of wine. So my question is, I would love to know what the inspiration was behind the plot of the story, if it was just like a random shower thought or a dream one night, or, you know, if you just wanted something out of the two characters and you just let your creative writing do the rest.
It's so funny when people ask me what my inspiration is for things. It's like, I kind of never really know, because it's always, there's always something brewing up there in my little, you know, witch's cauldron in my brain. And I'll just start writing things down. I have a huge folder of ideas and stuff, and I think I'll probably die before I can write all the books that I have in my brain. But Blackthorn, so I usually begin with just two characters and a conflict. And Blackthorn was a book that my new publisher was like, we want you to write a romance for us, and we're just going to have you do whatever you want. And I said, okay, well, that's fun. And my roots were in when I first published my first series, it was paranormal. And then I went to contemporary, but I always have kind of slipped in some paranormal aspects with my writing. And this one, it just kind of started out like it was a small town romance. And, you know, there was kind of a quirky family and stuff. And then all of these weird things started happening. I think I have a cat here. Okay. Yeah, sorry. And so as I started writing the book, it started getting weirder and weirder and weirder. And so I just usually let my imagination run. And then it turned out to be this really cuckoo book. So, I mean, I'm not the writer that is like, I usually don't know what the end of the book is going to be as I'm writing it. I'm just kind of like, okay, let's go and let's see. And then I let my imagination run wild. And then my readers are like, what the hell was that? Like, I don't know.
It's more like, fun that way.
You are the queen of a crazy ending. I'm always like, what just happened at the end of your books?
Well, I try and make it interesting. So if I'm writing and I get bored, then I'll have to scrap it, because I figure the readers are going to get bored too, you know, because you can really get bogged down in too much backstory or too much detail. I mean, I'm one of these people who I love to describe the interior of a room. And I've had so many readers just be like, okay, that's enough about the wallpaper. Let's move on, you know. So I have to try and train myself to keep the action going. But with this book, when I turned it into my publisher, she was like, okay, my editor was like, I really, really like these certain aspects, but I want us to go darker and let's make it more fucked up. And I was like, okay, I can do that. So then like the whole end of the book just became this fever dream of like, what is even really going on here? Yeah. And I turned it into her. She was like, yay, thank you. So yeah.
It definitely was a fever dream at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I knew I wanted it to be ambiguous, where people were like, what was real and what wasn't. I like doing that, because then you have to go back and read, okay, from the beginning, because you will forget all the little crumbs that I dropped and all the little weird things that are happening. And maybe you read something differently into it the second time around. So that's fun.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Especially with Pen Pal, because I wound up reading that twice for the podcast. There was so much stuff that I picked up and I was like, oh my God, how did I not catch this before? That's awesome.
Well, Pen Pal, I knew the end of the story. I kind of had to know. So the inspiration for that book came from, I was writing the third book in my Mafia series, the Queens and Monsters series. And the heroine had been kidnapped by a Russian assassin. And he took her to this, you know, his little cabin in the woods. And, hi, Riley.
She's here.
Hi. Hi. Sorry.
So she was a book editor, but she started writing a book during her captivity. And there was one line that she says in Savage Hearts where she's like, oh yeah, I'm writing a book about a woman who doesn't know that she's blank. And I won't give it away for anybody who hasn't read the book. But so that was the inspiration for Pen Pal. And I'm like, that sounds like a really good book. So I wrote that afterwards.
Oh, yeah. That is so awesome.
They're like tied together.
Yes, they're tied together.
Cool.
Yeah.
So have you been writing since you were a child? And if so, what is the first story that you can kind of remember, even in childhood, that you remember fully fleshing out and putting to paper?
So I was always a reader. I came from a family of readers and we were all super big book nerds. But I used to tell stories, you know, as a really young kid, and my mother called them lies. But the first story I ever remember telling was our neighbor. I think I was 5 or 6 years old, and our neighbor, I told her that it was my birthday and that I wanted, and it wasn't, and that I wanted this like, certain like playset or whatever. And, you know, I got in trouble for that. But yeah, so I've always been telling stories, but I didn't actually start writing until I was 40. I mean, I was just living my life, and I was, you know, I had a business with my husband and everything, and I always wanted to write a book, which I think a lot of people do. You know, we feel like there's a story in us that we want to tell. And I thought, yeah, someday I'll get to it. But I turned 40 and I just felt like that was a very big milestone for me anyway. And at that time, I was a big Twilight fan, and I had read an interview with Stephanie Meyer. I know, right?
I love Twilight. We all are very big fans, but Jenna's the biggest fan.
I am.
Okay. Well, I read an interview with Stephanie Meyer where she said that she was a stay-at-home mom. She didn't go to school for writing. She wasn't a journalist or anything like that. She had a dream one night, and she woke up about this vampire that wanted to, you know, drink this girl's blood. And so she wrote the book, and it ended up selling like, I don't know, 150 million copies or something. And so I thought that was very inspirational that she could do that, just, you know. And I thought, well, okay, I'm gonna do that too. If she can do it, I can do it, right? She's just an average person. Why not? I thought that was very inspirational. Yeah. So I wrote my first book, and I sold it to I got an agent, and I sold it to a publisher, and it was a bestseller. And I was just like, okay, I have a new career. So
yeah,
so
the rest is history.
Nice. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
My question is, now that we kind of know you just get these ideas in your head and kind of jot them down, when you actually sit down to write, do you have a writing routine? And if so, is it like your fun glass of wine and some music, or do you just like complete focus, just jotting everything down?
Yeah, I'm the complete focus girl. Like, I could never write in a coffee shop, you know, or anywhere. I get distracted very easily. And honestly, I get irritated by noise.
Yes.
So like, even if I can hear my husband somewhere in the house, I'm just like, so I put my earbuds in, and I usually have the cat with me, and I close the door. And usually it's best for, I'm not a morning person at all, but if I wake up early and I don't check my email or Facebook or anything, and I just go to the computer and I start to write, it seems like my brain is very clear then. So I try and write early in the morning and get at least a few hours in. And then I'll go on and do other things. And then later in the evening, like this kind of time of day, I'll come back to what I wrote. But I like to be alone, and I like to have chunks of time. And it's actually really hard because, you know, I'll have to leave my phone out of the room and things, because if you start checking your notifications and all of that, you really can't get things done. And I'm not a very fast writer. So I have to force myself to focus and just be in the zone, and, you know, like close the drapes and just be in this little room by myself. And that helps a lot. So
cool.
Yeah.
Riley, it's your question, right?
Oh.
That's like
memorized. Just looking at her starstruck.
I know. All right. So what is
like your favorite book that you've written or the one that you enjoyed writing the most?
I don't know if you guys have read Perfect Strangers, but I had a lot of fun writing that. That was, it has a plot twist, the same kind of a smack your face plot twist like Pen Pal does. But that was also the first time that I had done something like that. And I think it came out like in 2019. And I think the reviewers were just like, what is this book? Like, you know, sometimes people are not expecting to have these random things happen in my books. Now I think they know a little bit better because they don't trust me anymore. Right. But yeah, Perfect Strangers was fun. And Pen Pal was fun, but because I knew the whole time what was happening, it was a little heart-wrenching for me to be writing this, you know, these love scenes and stuff. And I'm like, what? Yeah, so.
I mean, they're going to get there happily ever after.
Yeah. I mean, some people think it's I think it's a happily ever after. Some people disagree. So, you know, it's up to the reader to decide. Okay. That's okay.
So this is about book specific questions about Blackthorn. Okay. When you were just brainstorming the whole idea, did you off the bat know that you wanted to do like a dual point of view? Or did that kind of happen organically as you were writing and you just kind of were like, oh, I kind of want this enemies to lover trope and also get that second person's perspective?
I wanted it to be completely from Maven's perspective because I wanted her to be a unreliable narrator. And my editor came back and said, I think we need a few chapters from Ronan because it'll give a little bit of backstory and a little bit more insight into the character. So, you know, normally I don't work so closely with an editor as I did on this one, but because I admire her so much and I think she has really good instincts, I was like, okay, I'm going to let you guide me here in this situation. But the first draft, there was no Ronan. And then I'm like, okay, you know, it would be a good idea if we have some of him in here. And I think it helps the reader to know the male character a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But also it's tough because once you start getting into his head, you know, there's less mystery of what's going on. And this whole book is predicated on it's the mystery of what actually is going on at Solstice. Yeah. What happened with the grandma? Who are these aunts? You know, are they good or are they bad? So there's a big mystery. So I thought if I put too much from Ronan's point of view, it would give too much away because he knows everything. But he's also unreliable too. And I think by the end of the book, you're like, okay, what actually happened? And is he, was that all a dream sequence or what? So.
When I got to the first Ronan chapter, I updated my Goodreads percentage and I was like, I'm literally foaming at the mouth right now. Like I was so excited when I got a Ronan chapter.
Well, you know, like, and I write that stuff and I'm just writing it and I'm in my little room doing my little weird cave writing thing. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is going to be so weird. And people are going to think I'm so weird. And I'm like, oh, but it's so good. You know, so
it's so good.
And I leave it.
We love the weird.
Okay. Cause you know, it's hard not to censor yourself as you're writing this stuff. Cause, And the longer I'm a writer and the more that, you know, you get, you know, you have interviews and you read reviews and things like that, it's hard not to let all of that noise go into your head and affect the writing process. So I try and stay away from it, but I've learned a little bit to just let myself get weird. And then at the end, it's like, okay, if it's too weird, you can take it out, but I never end up taking it out. So
please never
People
do.
People can handle the weird.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Like it, I have like a sidebar question from that since you mentioned reviews.
Yep.
Do you ever feel like when you do read the reviews, it like changes how you view your book or like, you know, you see people's different perspectives on it and have you ever been like, huh?
Yeah.
Or like, I mean,
I think it's changed. Anytime someone is talking about my work is good for me, even if it's bad. Because some of my most controversial books, like Pen Pal, there was a lot of negativity on one side with that. But, you know, all it did was help my sales. So I was like, okay. Yeah. Because people, and it's okay for people to have very passionate, even negative opinions about your work. It means that you're at least affecting them in some way. I never want someone to put down one of my books and just be like, yawn. You know, at least if they hate it, they had some kind of a reaction to it. And there's usually, it's because I'm pushing, you know, all these different buttons. But when I first started out writing, I would take these reviews, bad reviews, to heart. But you can't do that, because I'm really just writing. I'm telling a story, and I'm kind of almost just telling myself a story. And I do want to connect with the readers, and I want to write books that are going to be memorable, because there are so many cookie cutter books that are fine, and it's fine as entertainment, and that we can enjoy and you can put aside. But I really want to have something that sticks in your mind. So if a reader is, you know, unhappy with it, that's actually okay.
And reading is so subjective. I don't think there's no clear-cut good or bad books.
Right.
It's all dependent on who's reading it.
Yeah. And so I just figure, like, okay, if I get a 1-star review on whatever, it's like, okay, that's not my person. That's not my reader. And it's actually good, because if they're articulating what it is that they didn't like, and someone else reads that and they figure, okay, well, I actually don't like that too, and they don't read the book, well, then they've done another person a service, and then I'm not going to get another 1-star review just because of that. So it's all good.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a privilege to get good reviews and bad reviews, and all of it is just part of it. So I try and keep an arm's length distance from that and not let it affect me, because I know what I'm trying to say. And, you know, like you said, any kind of artist, you can't please everybody. So you have even amazing rock bands or even amazing movies or whatever, they have their fans and they have their detractors. So it's all good.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to be asking,
even when somebody tells me, sorry, Charlotte.
I was going to ask you how you felt about 1-star reviews, but then I saw your TikTok. And you recently posted a TikTok of 1-star reviews. And I was like, oh, she doesn't care about 1-star reviews. Not fake.
You know, I think, well, look, we all are human with, you know, feelings.
Of course.
But I also, like I said, I am able to distance it from myself a little. Like, these people don't know me as a person. And they're not, they're just critiquing the work and what they don't like about it, which is totally legitimate. And I feel like that's what book reviews are for, and movies. So people can talk about it, right? And they can decide what they want. But some of these 1-star reviews are so damn funny.
I know.
And they're so mad. And I just start giggling when I read them, because it's like, oh my God, you need to get a hobby, because you're just taking this way too seriously. And so
there's been some 1-star reviews that I've read where I'm like, this makes me want to read the book.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Somebody can tell me they hate a book and I'm like, oh. Give it to me.
Yeah. I want to read it. No, this is the reasons why. And you're like, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
It's all fair.
So obviously, in an ideal world, Blackthorn gets a movie. What is your ideal fan cast for Maven, Ronan, and more specifically Q? Because I want to know more about Q.
It's funny, because I don't ever do fan casting in my head of like who these people are. I don't have mood boards of, you know, certain actors or whatever. Because I don't know, I don't base it on anyone. So to me, it's just, when I start writing the book, I'm just getting to know these characters, and I start, like, the first 20% is just me sussing out who is who and what they are. So I don't have a picture in my mind of who these characters are. And people always want to know, well, who would play this or who would play that? I'm like, I don't know. Usually my answer is, I wouldn't want it to be somebody super famous that's going to bring some kind of preconceived, you know, whatever notion. Like, okay, it can't be Henry Cavill. It can't be Jason Momoa. Like, it has to be somebody that you can lose yourself in the character as you're watching it. So I don't know. You guys will have to tell me.
Yeah, but I kind of think that, after seeing the previews for Frankenstein, Jacob Elordi as Frankenstein should be cute.
Isn't he amazing, though? I mean, I didn't even know who this actor was, and I saw these, and I'm just like, oh, I can't wait to see that movie.
Yeah.
But so if Guillermo del Toro can direct, that's all I want. Other than that.
Ooh, yeah.
Guillermo, if you're watching.
Guillermo is my man.
he's clearly listening to Smut Up and Listen, so honestly, you can get a phone call.
I feel like he'd be perfect for this book, too.
Wouldn't he? He would make it even better than I could ever even dream about it. I'd be like, you take it. You do it. I'll be here and going, yes.
Right.
Yeah. Is Q sexy then?
Depends on what you're type is, right?
Like, that's true.
Should be sexy. I mean, you never know. It's all the casting. Like, yeah. Does he have that whole, you know, look? I don't know.
He's definitely a real freak. I'll tell you that.
He is a freak. I mean, let's face it, the whole family are freaks. But then the whole thing at the end is like, you're like, or are they? Like, are they? Yeah. I don't know.
Right?
Yeah. In my head, I was just picturing Hilda and Zelda as the aunties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In my head.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it.
The aunties. I know you could go in any which direction with that.
You really could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And let's see. What made you decide to make the ending ambiguous? And is it open to interpretation or is it 100% a supernatural story?
I can't tell you. It is open to interpretation unless I do a sequel, and then it will, you know, everything will have to be. But I think if I did do a sequel, I would take it from the daughter's point of view. I think I would take it from Bea's point of view, and she would be a little bit older, and it would go from there. So I like to leave things open and unanswered, because it's kind of like life. Like there are no hard answers. So you got to make it up for yourself.
Sometimes I love that, and then sometimes I'm like, just tell me,
just tell me. I know. This one, I was deliberately, especially with the epilogue that you see from the detective's point of view, that kind of made it even like, okay, wait, now there's a fox over there that's looking at me weird, and, you know, so that. I like to have usually either the house is a character in and of itself, or the season is a character too. Like, you know, it's Halloween and it's all spooky and everything. I like to get all that stuff going in, so you're never really sure what's happening.
We did discuss that in the episode yesterday too, where I was like, there was so much stuff happening before outside of the house. There's no way that the ending isn't supernatural, but open to interpretation.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have my, you know, I mean, I know it's real and what's not, but
right.
Yeah. But maybe you will with the sequel. We'll see. If there's a sequel, I don't know.
Sometimes I get we want one. Yes.
Like, I don't, I'm like, that's done and I'm going on to something else and I'm bored with it. So I don't know.
I feel like you tied it in like a nice, pretty bow, but you also left it like open. So it can, that door can be like wedged right open and you can continue on.
Yeah.
Like it can be a standalone, but it can also definitely be part of a series.
Do you think Pen Pal could be a sequel?
Yeah.
She said immediately yes.
She was like, write it right now.
She's like, matter of fact, the arc, please.
Yeah. I'm just asking.
I think it
you write it, we'll read it.
Okay. Yeah.
We will.
My question was kind of along the same lines as Riley's, but you may or may not answer. Can you give us one example where it was reality and where it was skewed perception for Maitman? Like, was one particular thing actually the carbon monoxide, or was it?
Or was it not carbon monoxide and it was the house?
Supernatural.
Right. So the house itself is a third, well, I don't know however many characters we have, the theories are, okay, it was carbon monoxide poisoning, or they're witches, and or the house itself is an evil entity, right?
Yeah,
so those are all kind of like, who's really the main player here? I don't know if you guys ever read The Haunting of Hill House. It's a really good older story, and it's spooky. And so it's kind of like that, where the house has its own wants and desires. And so because this house is like generationally, oh, I can't even say that word right now. It's the point. It's been around for a long time, right? And it's housed all these generations of women who've been persecuted. So like, is the house itself just absorbing the energy and I don't know. Yeah, I can't tell you.
Also, okay.
I got an extra theory and I really like the extra theory, so kind of going with that now.
Okay.
Now we're just in our little random set of question section. You have built multiple settings and whole worlds under your pen name. Knowing how far your reach has grown and how much your readers connect with it, if given the chance, would you choose to still go by JT Geisinger, or would you change it?
You mean change it to a different pen name or my real name? Yeah,
your real name, whatever. Like, whichever. Now that you know, like, you know, how far your reach has gone, if you knew from the very beginning that you would be a New York Times bestselling publisher, do you think you would still use a pen name or your real name?
I would definitely use a pen name, and I would make it simpler. So Geisinger is actually my real last name. So it's like, that's not even really a pen name. And it's like, I'm married into that name. So nobody knows how to pronounce it. You know, I would have made it something easy like Stone or, or just something super simple, because it's way, and it looks easier on a, it looks better on a book cover. And yeah, so if I had to give advice to a writer starting out, definitely take a pen name, especially now, because people are cuckoo. And yeah. I get the weirdest stalkers. I mean, you would not imagine the stuff that people will send me, and they'll try and find me and all this other, just because I wrote some character that they're obsessed with. And to me, it's like, you know, oh, you guys, you realize this is fake and made up, right? It's it's made up. It doesn't exist, but people get so crazy about it. So yeah, I would definitely, I would be like, I don't even know. Maybe I would, if I really had it to do all over again, I think I would never show my face, and I would be a name that you didn't know if there was a gender a race or what the identity was. It would be completely neutral. And I would probably, like, if I was going to do an interview like this, I would probably like just have some kind of a sticker over my face and like, like the voice, like they do in the witness protection program. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's very important to, it's nice to connect with your readers, but you can do that in a way that's not, you know, physically present, but I don't know. Yeah, so I'd go with a different name.
Very cool. That's really awesome. Yeah.
Totally fair.
So if time and money were not an issue, what would be your ideal setting to just sit down and write for like an entire week?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because sometimes when I'm on a deadline and I really need to focus, I will go away. So when I lived in Southern California, I would drive up to Santa Barbara and I would stay for a couple of weeks at this little place called the Spanish Garden Inn. And it was quaint and it was small, and I would lock myself in there and I would finish the book, because, and I would just get room service. And when I would check out, they would be like, we've never had anybody spend so much money on room service.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, thank you. Or, you know, now that I live up in the Tahoe area, sometimes I'll go to Lake Tahoe and I'll just stay there for a week. So for me, it's, where would I go now? I mean, I don't know. I would just go somewhere. I love room service. So anywhere that has a, you know, hotel that
five-star room service
with a view, I like to look out and see something, you know? Yeah. So it doesn't matter where it is in the world, but alone with room service. Yeah. That would be my thing.
Love that. Go down to Reno, go to the Peppermill. They have a little pool. It'll be a great time.
The views from the Peppermill are immaculate.
Yeah.
I love it.
Going off of food, if you can only eat one food item for a whole year, what would you pick?
I mean,
what?
That's a drink.
Yeah. It's got nutrients. It's got good, like, you know, I don't know. Yeah. One food item for a whole year, like breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pizza, probably.
Good
or tacos. I do love a good taco. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing healthy like yogurt.
No.
Imagine yogurt for a whole year.
I couldn't.
Every meal. You'd be very thin, though. You'd just be super svelte because of the back.
Yeah. Let's see. What is your favorite movie and your like favorite genre?
Of movies or?
Yeah, of movies.
Okay, so I have a couple. I love The Princess Bride because it's just such a cute rom-com. Yes. You know, it's very sweet. And I love The Notebook because it made me cry. And it's a real
so good
love story. Yeah. And Ryan Gosling is just, you know, my
what
jam.
A hunk.
Yes.
I just like him. There's something about him. My husband's like, really? And my favorite genre for movies. I mean, I love romance. I love to watch romances. So my husband likes action movies. So there's always things blowing up and people getting killed. And I'm like, where's the love story? You know, if there's not at least some love story, I'll just get up and leave. Cause it's just like, why do you like death so much? You know?
That's my husband with a Jason like, Statham movie.
Why do you
movie.
Write the books that you write? I don't know. Yeah. I'll read him every once in a while, a little snippet of my book. I read him this one portion of Blackthorn where it's like when, can I even say it? I think it's the greenhouse.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
And, you know, there's like some comparison to a French bottle of wine. And I read the scene to my husband and he's like, what is wrong with you?
Like, they don't get it.
To me. I thought it was really good. And he's like, oh my God, it's disgusting. Oh my God.
I That's loved like, it. It made me LOL. Like I was laughing out loud when I read that part. I loved it.
I think he went and brushed his teeth. He was just like, whoa.
During our episodes, we'll make Riley read excerpts of like the wildest sex scenes in the books.
And we made her read that one.
Yeah. And she's like, one of my questions is going to be, what made you choose to use the term wet hole?
Yes, I forgot I was going to ask that. Because that is like, yeah. I always want to ask like, what makes you choose like tight ring of muscle? Right. Wet hole, so stuff like that. I love it.
After writing so many sex scenes, so I've written 35 novels and they all have romance and love scenes and whatever. Before both of my parents passed away, I was a little bit more poetic about it. It was a little bit more, not his throbbing member, but a little bit more, you know, old yeah. school. And then, I mean, I don't know if it's bad to say, but I feel like once they both passed away, I felt this like, they're not going to read it. So I'm just
let loose.
It, right. And there's only so many ways that you can say these things. And so depending upon the character and how they would perceive it or say it, you know, so like my mafia guys in the Queens of Monsters series, they're just saying all the words and it's really super raunchy. And after a while, I just like, if I'm in a mood, if I'm writing a sex scene and I'm in a mood, I'll just be like, oh yeah, oh, that's a wet hole. And again, I tell myself, if it's too gross at the end, you can always edit it out. But I usually just leave it in because I'm just like, whatever. They're going to like it or they're not going to like it.
We love it.
Yes.
I mean, I love it. He did suck his own cum out of her butthole. So yeah, he got real wild with it.
That's the part where my husband was just like... Truly, you don't think that sex scene? He's like, I'm gonna die.
Like, he's like, you don't want me to do that, do you?
No, I mean, he doesn't even want to know what goes on in my books. He would, we'd probably get divorced. He's like, you're disturbed. I read slut too, so you know, I get all these ideas. It's like, oh, pretty good, but you have to be in the right moment, and the character has to feel correct, you know, for you to do that. And, and some people love it, and other people just like, you know, what's funny? Most people don't get offended in my books at the sex scenes. They'll get offended if I'll say something, because there's a church scene in Blackthorn too, where she goes into the church, you know, and there's like Jesus's head falls off the crucifix. And there's discussions about
Virgin Marys.
People get more offended about that than the really raunchy sex stuff. So yeah. Oh, so
that scene,
everybody has
their
trigger, right?
It was so ambient and spooky. I thought you did it so well.
Yeah. Oh, you did, because I was scared. I said, absolutely not.
That would be a good, like, a Guillermo del Toro scene.
Yes. Yeah. See? Yeah.
He would probably have, like, the Virgin Mary, like, have, like, blood coming down her eyes or something, too. Like,
throwing bangs. I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
So our final question would be, what is currently on your TBR? And also, what books would you consider your own personal 5-star reads?
Ooh. On my TBR, Naima Simone wrote a book or published a book recently called Huntsman. And I think it's a retelling of, is it Robin Hood? It's a retelling of one of the, but it sounds like a sexy, yeah. And she's really cute and sweet and I love her. And on my TBR, I'm so bad with books because when I'm writing something, I try not to read romance because I don't want it to get in my brain and come out. Yeah. But yeah, what was the other part of the question? My TBR and what else?
Your own personal 5-stars.
Romance wise or just books?
Anything.
Wise? Well, I generally like books where everyone is dead at the end. So, or I like books that have a really emotional experience for me. That's what makes me remember these books. So The Road by Cormac McCarthy. It's a dystopian novel.
That is
it's
so the end good of the world, book.
And it's a man who's walking through a burned out America with his young son. At the end of that book, I mean, that's like one of the books that made me want to be a writer, because the language and the way that and then at the end, you're so devastated. So that book too. One of the books I read within the last year it's a monster smut romance that I thought was so good. It's called The Lady of Rooksgrave Manor, I think.
We've done that one.
Yeah. Right? Wild. I'm like, this is so creative and it's very sexy and it's all over the place and there's all these men and I'm like, it's pretty good.
Yeah,
Catherine, that one's a good one. She's wild.
That one was like banging the whole time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different monsters. I liked that it was different. It was unusual and it was a little bit like it felt historical sort of, you know, but I really like that book. But I'll have to send you my list of like all the stuff because I won't remember right now. I should look it up. There's a lot of good books to be read. I feel like you just can't get through them all. So
I know, it's not depressing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you guys listen to books or do you read them physically?
I mostly read.
I do both. Okay.
I mostly read.
Yeah. Too. I listen to books like while I'm working all day long. Mm-hmm. I'll like listen to audiobooks. And then when I get home, I physically read. Like I'm always reading.
Yeah. Because I feel like audiobooks, you can do it anytime.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't really listen to them because most of the time the narrators do not sound how I want them to sound.
Yeah. It's a real struggle.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I just read it myself.
Yeah. That's fair.
I've actually had books that I produced too that were like, I'm just like, it doesn't sound right. And so just the whole story is wrong. But yeah.
What was the last book you read, Riley?
Don't do her dirty like that.
I know, right? She's like,
no, because I know what it is. And she gave it 5 stars.
I did give it 5 stars. It was called Suck Mommy's Piss Flaps. It was very good.
Add that to the TBR.
Oh, here's another one for you guys. Okay, as we're all ladies here, have you read All Fours by Miranda July?
No.
Okay. It's really interesting. It's a little bit older than your guys' age, but it's a woman who's having like an early midlife crisis. And she's a writer and she accepts an offer to go to New York and like, I don't know if she's doing some publication tour or whatever. She lives in California. So she's like, I'm going to drive. I just feel like I'm going to drive. She has a husband and a young son at home. So she makes it like an hour outside of LA and she stops at a gas station and the guy who's like cleaning her windshield, she's like, so she gets a hotel and the rest of the book is her having this crazy midlife crisis with this gas station attendant. It's so good. It's like this, it's almost, I don't know if it's like feminist, you know, literature or whatever it is, but she's having an absolute meltdown and a sexual awakening at the whole time. I could not look away. Ooh. It was a train wreck of a book. It was so good and so well written from a woman's perspective of like what you go through with your sexuality and with being a mom and just wanting to get away from your whole life. And then she just does for a week and she lies to her husband the whole time. She's like, oh yeah, now I'm in Colorado, but she's in this hotel room.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that sounds so good.
All Fours.
We should do that. That sounds so
good. Immediately love it or you'll just be like, this woman is terrible, which she is. But it's also really, really good. So
yeah. I need to know more. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun to talk to you guys. Yeah.
Yes. And anybody who's listening, if you need like a romantic, dark, spooky, ambient read, Blackthorn by J.T. Geisinger, check it out. It is so good. Yes.
So good.
Little twisty. Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, have a good rest of your night.
You too.
It's been a pleasure meeting you.
Yes.
Thank you so much, JT.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
See you next time.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at Smut Up and Listen Podcast and on TikTok at Smut Up and Listen.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.